like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Ashley Much, manager of Pets for Life in Philadelphia. Pets for Life is a nationally expanding outreach effort that, relying on an array of strategies and offering a variety of resources, seeks to help pets and their humans in low-income communities. The program is widening out to a growing number of cities, including Chicago, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, where Much oversees the enterprise. She's a former animal cruelty officer. We'll find out more about all this when we speak with Ashley Much in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Before we go any further, though, and to echo Randy's comments at the end of his show, I want to say a few words about Eddie Haight, a deeply devoted and much beloved member of the WMNF family, who suffered a serious heart attack Sunday night and has remained in critical condition ever since. Eddie's one of those wonderful people who, among many other virtues, quietly steps into any number of roles to help the radio station, always seeking to make WMNF a better place. He's also a profoundly lovely man and, by the way, a longtime supporter of Talking Animals. Indeed, the last time I saw Eddie, he was wearing a Talking Animals t-shirt. Anyway, we're all enormously concerned about him, so if you're a prayer person, please say a prayer for Eddie Haight. If you're not a prayer person, please send him healing thoughts. Thank you. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief discussion with Blanca Hernandez, founder and president of Forever Yours Pet Rescue, which is gearing up for a major adoption event it's holding in Oldsmar in about 3 weeks' time, on August 24th. Also later in the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. We'll be offering a copy of the CD by Damon Albarn for a solo effort by the creative leader of Blur and Gorillaz. And it features a wonderful animal song about a baby elephant, Mr. Tembo. Right now, meanwhile, let's hear an animal song. This one recommended to me by E-Love, host of the magical show Ultrasounds, airing on WNF Thursday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. This is Danielle, Ate the Sandwich with Pet Store on Talking Animals. That was Danielle, Ate the Sandwich with Pet Store. Let's move now into our chat with Ashley about Pets for Life, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Ashley Mutch to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So, of course, the focus of our conversation today will be Pets for Life. But before we dive into that story, let's first explore a bit of your story. First, are you a Philadelphia native, or where do you hail from?
I grew up in North Jersey, and then right after I graduated college, I moved to Philadelphia, and I've been here for about 5 years.
And what did animals mean to you when you were growing up? What sort of animals were part of your family?
I always had pets growing up. I had a dog and a cat, and I just absolutely loved animals since back when I can't even remember. And I always knew that when I grew up and I wanted to find a career that did something working with animals in some way, shape, or form.
And so what was the first job that sort of realized that sounds like that longstanding goal or dream of yours?
I was a humane officer, and that was my first job here in Philadelphia. And I did that for about 3 years. And I was really just in love with the fact that I was in the animal welfare field and that I was really able to do my part in helping animals just live a better, healthier life.
And can people listening who may not know exactly, can you kind of further explain what that sort of position involves?
Sure. I did animal cruelty investigations. So I did work in Philadelphia. I also worked in about 25 counties in eastern, moving out towards central Pennsylvania. Any complaints that would come in through a hotline just about some abuse or neglect or any concerns that anyone had for animals, I would go out and investigate those. And depending on what the outcome was, we would do our best part as law enforcement to help that animal out.
And Ashley, I mean, a lot of people would find dealing with animal cruelty on a regular, in this case, daily basis, pretty bleak and depressing, and therefore probably wouldn't necessarily consider it as an occupation. I mean, what drew you specifically to that work? We already established that you were an animal person from the time you were a kid. But why that particular job, and how was that? What was that like for you?
You know, my degree is in criminal justice. I was kind of in between what I wanted to do when I actually went to college to pursue a degree. And becoming an animal cop was the best mixture of both of my passions at the time that I could find. And, you know, it is a difficult position to hold and go to work every day and do that type of work and really deal with some of the things that we had to see. But, you know, all in all, at the end of the day, you know that you're doing your part and you're able to help animals in the end. And that was really my goal all along, was just, you know, what's the best way that I can do it and how can I help animals every day? And that kind of gets you through the hardships of the job.
And what was, if you had to pinpoint what was the hardest part of doing that work?
I think, you know, you're out there and you realize you are doing your part, but there's a lot of pets and people that need your help that just, you know, it was almost like a long waiting list of people that you felt like you could never really get to and really help them in time. And that was probably one of the hardest parts, which is why, you know, I absolutely love Pets for Life now and the position that I hold with the Humane Society of the United States. But you know, it was a difficult thing to go home every day and realize that there's still people and pets out there that are suffering.
I guess to flip this around, I guess I should also ask before we move on to Pets for Life and other things, what did you find was the most rewarding part of that work as a humane officer and dealing with sort of animal neglect and cruelty day to day?
You know, a lot of the rewards came from either seeing the end result, helping the pet, watching a pet get better. You know, if an animal was seized, we would watch it through the process and get adopted. Just a lot of those feel-good stories that we would always hope to see in the end when we would have to seize an animal. But, you know, really just knowing the situation a pet came from or an animal came from and really being able to help them, that was the best part.
Very cool. Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Ashley Mutch of Pets for Life, which through a variety of measures seeks to help pets and their humans in low-income communities. If you'd like to ask Ashley a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Ashley, can you describe the transition from working as a humane officer to working for Pets for Life, starting with maybe even a capsule summary beyond just a couple phrases I've used so far of what Pets for Life is?
Yeah, well, it was interesting for me, especially because I worked the same streets as a humane officer as I do now as the manager of Pets for Life. You know, and it's been great. It's been an awesome experience, and I feel like we're out there in the community. We're going door to door. We're meeting people right where they are. And I'm no longer kind of correlating the word poverty, and it doesn't translate into neglect or abuse, as I'm seeing as I'm working with Pets for Life. Is, you know, the people and the pets living in poverty really just have a lack of engagement, very little positive messaging on any general pet wellness or information on any pet care issues. And really getting that word out there is dispelling that myth that people in these underserved communities really are opposed to certain things like spay and neuter, or, you know, are just not as into caring for their pets as most people would think. And it's really nice to get out there and see that we're able to really knock that myth down and serve the people and the pets that really need it.
And just so we have some kind of foundation here on a couple ways, I mean, what if you just had to kind of give a fairly succinct definition or explanation of Pets for Life, what would that be?
We are a community-based outreach program. We're using an innovative approach to really reach people and their pets in these underserved communities to extend the pet care resources and information that they've been lacking.
And also, so we get kind of a sense of the specifics and the scope involved, let's do just a bit of sort of by the numbers. So how many pets or families with pets are we talking about living at sort of the low income or poverty level nationally?
So nationally, we often see the number of 3.4 million pets that are euthanized in our shelters every year. And the work that Pets for Life is doing is not replacing that, but it's rather a supplement to that work, because what Pets for Life is tackling and what we've seen as a national estimate is 23 million pets that are living in poverty that may never reach those shelter walls. So we're really trying to create a transformational change for companion animals by serving and getting information out to these 23 million pets living in poverty.
And what do you consider sort of the chief challenges of getting the word out and helping sort of spread that help that you just mentioned?
You know, it's been the biggest challenge is probably the lack of engagement that these communities have had. So it's really perfecting the approach and how to talk to people, and really entering into these communities that have been left untouched by animal welfare for years, and having the community engage with us and trust us and let us share information with them, and then really empowering the owner to make that decision on what to do for their pet that would be best.
So what are some specific measures then that Pets for Life employs to sort of help accomplish that very thing?
The biggest thing that Pets for Life will always instill is just always be non-judgmental. Most of our work is door-to-door, meeting people right where they are to share information versus going up to educate them about something. Obviously, you know, if someone came up to me and they say, hey, let me educate you on something, I'm going to get a little defensive and wonder why you're approaching me in that way. When we just have a great conversation and, you know, we can knock down some of those barriers of just feeling defensive. When we really approach someone with that non-judgmental approach and just give them the information, we leave it with them. And we want to do it in a sense that is going to empower them for the long run and hopefully spread throughout the community where they can talk to their neighbor or talk to their family member, and they're able to share that same information and it'll actually stick, instead of just, you know, they're overcome with the fact that someone's there that wants to educate them and feels like they're a better person than them, you know.
And they shut down.
Yeah, we can really just open it up to an honest conversation and just share the information that they've been missing for so long.
And so when you do adopt that non-judgmental, sort of more conversational approach that you've described, to what extent do folks typically at that point welcome the help and how, on the other hand, sort of how often do you find them nonetheless resisting the offers of information or help?
The response in every city that we're in has been overwhelming. And we are in 4 direct care HSUS cities, which include Atlanta, Chicago, Philly, and L.A. We also train and mentor other 18 other mentorship markets across the country. And we've been so successful in every city by opening up our conversations to just saying, hey, did you know this about your pet, or did you know that this is something that can really help you guys? You know, people just start coming out and approaching us on the street when we're out there. And we really do see that about 15% of the pets that we initially meet are actually altered, which leaves a huge percentage unaltered. But after we positively engage them and use our Pets for Life approach, we're getting about 70% of the pets that we meet beta neutered. And that's, again, through having this non-judgmental approach, empowering our owners, and they're really making the right decision, which, again, goes back to dispelling that myth that people in these communities don't want to stay near their pets.
And that's a pretty staggering leap if you're meeting these folks and the general percentages of the altered pets are 15, and then through your interaction and offering help and resources, that jumps way up to 70% of those then are getting spayed and neutered. To what extent to achieve that kind of pretty huge number, are you assisting either with low cost or you know, spay neuter, or how are they actually taking the information that you're providing and then getting those animals spayed and neutered?
So what we like to do is we strive to knock down every barrier that there could ever be for anybody that's interested in any of these pet wellness services. Pets for Life Direct Care Cities, we do offer spaying and neutering for free, and with that comes their vaccines that they need, obviously. But, you know, we're really able to provide some other things like collars and leashes and flea and tick treatment. But when it comes to barriers such as transportation, how do I get my pet to the clinic?
Yeah.
We offer that as well. And we have great volunteers. We also have staff, and we all work to really problem solve and take down that barrier so that we can just get to the end point and be successful with each person that we meet. Every single one of our clients has something to overcome or some barrier standing in the way. We really try and take the time to help them figure out the best way to succeed and to get through it.
And nonetheless, given those efforts and all the pretty amazing things that you're offering them, do you still find that some just, for one reason or another, can't overcome that barrier and just decline the help, or in this case specifically, let's say, don't go ahead and get their animals spayed or neutered?
Yeah, you know, we come across it quite often, and the beauty of Pets for Life, and this, again, is in all 22 of our markets, is that we have a great follow-up process. With our clients, it's never just, hello, nice to meet you, goodbye, we'll never see you again. We have everybody's information. We have a great database that we use, and we love to follow up with people that we've met. If we've had that conversation with you and you've said no, that's okay. We're not going to pressure you. We're not going to push you. But instead, we're going to continue to share information. We're going to check in on you. We're going to make sure everybody's happy and healthy. And hopefully down the line when we follow up, you know, we've had clients that it's been 6 months or a year or even 2 years later, and they agree to finally get their pet spayed or neutered for whatever reason. You know, again, it's just being able to empower someone with that information without pressure. And most of the time, we are so successful with that approach. Just by saying, listen, we just want to make sure you have the right information to make the decision that is best for you right now. But we never forget about or give up on a client, because that's part of building the trust. And really, being able to have an honest conversation with someone is bigger than anything I could ask for.
For sure.
If I'm going to go out there, I'm going to tell you something that's not necessarily true, or I'm going to try and pressure you. Again, it's just one of those things that would turn any one of us off from wanting to engage with the person more and you know, follow through with services that are being offered.
Yeah, not to mention, I would think if you did do those sorts of tactics, you'd get sort of the reverse word of mouth, whereas I would think everything you've described that you do offer, I would think there'd be such amazing word of mouth from families that you haven't yet had a chance to speak with or whatever, hearing the family across the street or down the block, what kind of help they did get from you, that would just be like, they would be that much more receptive when you first approach them. It sounds like there is a specific protocol for returning to those families who, again, for whatever reason, might initially decline the help or the resources that you are offering.
Yes, definitely. We always like to leave everything on a positive note, so that when we come back and we talk to you again, there's never any negativity kind of wavering in the air. We go right back out and we just offer a smile and a hello, and we start talking about pet resources or pet wellness, or answer any questions that they might have.
All right, let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ashley Much.
Oh, hi there. This is a great guest, and I've never heard of this organization before. But I had a question, like, what happens when you run into a household that has an obviously neglected or a sick animal? And, like, what happens then?
That's the question I get all the time. And first, I want to just clarify again that Pets for Life is with the Humane Society of the United States. So Pets for Life in itself is not an organization. And a lot of our information is on the Humane Society's website. So I just wanted to clarify that for you.
Okay.
You know, and the best part, again, about the non-judgmental approach and being able to build a relationship with our clients is that if we happen to come across a situation that someone may be overwhelmed, or there's something going on that it's just not the time or place where we feel the client may not be able to take care of it best on their own, we can have that honest conversation with them, and we can discuss the options from that point. So if it's something where, you know, we have a person that has too many pets, or we have a person that has a pet that's really sick, whether it's discussing humane euthanasia or discussing the possible surrender of some animals, by building that relationship and still being non-judgmental, we're able to have that honest conversation in the end. And we
thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thanks, caller. Actually, maybe to sort of build on that caller's question, Ashley, I'd be curious to know, because with that specific scenario that the caller raised, I mean, your background as a humane officer before coming to Pets for Life would seem to be invaluable. How many of your colleagues have a similar background?
I would be the only one that has been in humane law enforcement. A lot of my colleagues have worked with animals and worked in clinics or shelters, as well as working with the Humane Society of the United States. But I'm the only one that's been out there really as a humane law enforcement officer.
Let me ask a question that also may come up now and again, as the caller's question did that you noted. So let me play sort of awful, ugly devil's advocate and represent a, you know, sort of unpleasant position that I imagine, again, must service now and then. But if a family is living at the poverty level and facing an array of attendant trials and tribulations and paying the bills, keeping the food on the table and so on, maybe some would say that's not the best household in which it makes sense to try to maintain one or more pets. What's your reaction when you, I would think at least periodically, hear that point of view expressed?
Yeah, you know, I have heard that often as well, and I think right off the bat, I think to myself, who am I to neglect someone or deny someone of having that love of a pet in their home with them? The great thing about Pets for Life and what we're doing is that we can actually offer other resources that can help sustain that pet in the home. We don't want to continue to add to that number that are being euthanized in the shelters every year. We want to strive to keep that pet in the home. And there's great resources in every city. And, for example, in Philadelphia, we have a great partnership with Animal Control where they have a food bank for pets, and it's once every month. And they give you such a great amount of food that now clients that were struggling to feed their pet don't even have to worry about it at this point. I think we have to realize that even though we might go in and take a pet from someone's home, from one of these people that are living at or below the poverty level, there's so many pets out there that they're going to get another pet regardless. And I think we forget that there's always a supply of pets somewhere, which is why when we tackle this population and the pets living in poverty, and we get them spayed and neutered, we're able to keep the pet in the home, keep it as a healthier pet, and all around it's just a better option for the pet and for the family. So that we know we've already touched on medical care and given them information and given them a resource so that if they do have a problem, they have someone they can go to.
Yeah, so that raises the general description there, and then the food bank part of it raises kind of, a obvious question. How is the program sort of funded or underwritten? Just because it sounds like, again, you've mentioned that there's, in many cases at least, free spay neuter, vaccinations, and now food that can be provided on a regular basis. Where does the money come from to sort of keep that going?
We have a bunch of grants, as well as we do a ton of fundraising to supply all the funds that are needed to run the program. In our mentorship cities, PetSmart Charities is funding these 18 cities that are not HSU direct care cities, while we just offer the training and the mentoring for them. But for Pets for Life direct care cities, we have a bunch of fundraisers we do, and we're doing it every day, and then some grants that help us to pay for the spay and neuters that we're providing in our cities.
That's great. So how does it determine, there's the four current locations, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Chicago, and L.A., and then you mentioned 18 others that are not in, as formalized as that, but get training and mentoring. So how would one or more of those 18 become something more like the four that exist? I mean, is there a certain amount of characteristics that sort of identify the ones that of the four that do exist in thus far?
We started with the four cities with no intention of saying these are more of a high priority than another city. They just were the cities chosen, and based on some intake that was done with community outreach and other statistics, finding animal service resource deserts and all that, we have our four main cities, but all of the other cities with the 18 mentorship markets are, they have the same statistics. Everything that we're looking at when we look at our four cities are typically just the same information across the board. So, we're really focused on our four cities with HSUS, but we're also focusing on these mentorship cities that just, even though they're not HSUS direct care cities, they're still just as important, and we're really working hard in all of the markets across the board.
Okay, so it sounds like a relatively fine distinction then between those four and the other 18 in terms of what they offer and what they do.
Yeah, we work with other organizations. So, for example, in Camden, we work with AWA. And they're a mentorship city, but they do the Pets for Life program through the AWA, so they're not an actual Pets for Life named city. They are a mentorship market doing the Pets for Life philosophy and work through the AWA.
Of the 18 locations, are one or more of them in the state of Florida?
We have a group in Jacksonville. We span from Las Vegas all the way to Providence. We're in Texas. We're kind of all over the map. In the fall, we're going to be adding five additional cities, which the application process is actually going on right now. So all in all, we're going to be having an additional five cities in the country we're excited about.
So those five cities that you're going to add will be much more comparable to the four that exist that we have talked about: Atlanta, Chicago, LA, and Philly.
Well, they're going to be mentorship cities as well.
So I see. Okay, so that'll bump up to 23, but it'll be more in that form than the four that we've otherwise noted. Okay, I gotcha. Again, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Ashley Much of Pets for Life in Philadelphia. Other locations, as we've noted, helping folks in low-income communities with their animals and helping those animals. Again, if you have a question for Ashley, 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Just in our last couple moments here. But when learning about programs like Pets for Life, I always think it's sort of further illuminating to really hear some specific stories. Like, I don't know if there's a family or two that come to mind of a real success story where you or a colleague of yours, really sort of had those kind of conversations early on and sort of helped them and maybe really turned something around. Are there a story or two like that comes to mind that really made a big difference to the family and their animals?
Yeah, I mean, we have obviously great stories every day. One of my most recent stories would come from a house that I visited just about a week and a half ago. This is a new client, that we heard. Needed some help through word of mouth through one of her buddies. And we went to this home, and it was an older couple, and they were really struggling with having too many unaltered males and females in the house. So they were constantly having litters of puppies, and they just didn't know how to make that stop. So essentially, they didn't know about spay and neuter. And when we went and we shared information with them, and we did a little vet check on all of the animals, and we made sure that everybody was okay. But we let them know just the basic facts. And we always like to throw out, spaying and neutering can prevent cancer, and spaying and neutering can extend a pet's life and cut down anxiety and all that. They were just blown away by these facts, some things that we take for granted, and I personally grew up knowing, and then we forget in these underserved communities with no resources, they don't know that. So that's basically, you know, the day-to-day of what we do is going out there and doing exactly what we did with Doris and her family. And we walked out of that home with every pet getting the spay and neuter appointment. And, you know, she was just so grateful for the fact that we took time out of our day, share that information with her, and to help her. She loves her pets, but she knows that if they continue to breed, that, you know, in her words, it was they don't feel good or they don't like this, meaning the female doesn't like being pregnant over and over again, or it's too stressful, and she just wants everybody to be able to live and be happy in her home. You know, so those basic little facts, those are my favorite success stories, because as much as I know about spay and neuter and people in animal welfare know about spay and neuter, you know, we forget that these communities just don't have that information available to them, and they never have. A problem she's had for years and years and years and years, we were able to fix with this one conversation.
That's great. That must be so, so gratifying. And to mention just the math, doing the math of all the puppies and kittens that were no longer going to be born in that household as a result. So
Yeah.
And so we talked earlier about sort of a protocol to follow with families that maybe aren't as receptive initially. Is there similarly, I assume, probably some sort of protocol to follow up with families that have been helped by Pets for Life, including the one maybe that you just described?
Yeah, we always follow up whether they have an appointment and they've completed it, or we get to their house and they already have all pets spayed and neutered. It doesn't mean that we're not interested in you. Pets for Life as a whole, we want to just become a resource for these communities. So whatever the question may be or whatever the problem may be, they know that they can always call us. So everybody that we meet them on the street, or we have a word of mouth client, you know, we make sure we call them regardless of what service they've accepted or denied at the time, or, you know, what kind of pets they have in their home. We're always there, and we always just call and make sure everything's okay. We do it 24 to 48 hours, and then down the line, we just let them know we're here, we're a resource, and we'll check back in, you know, 6 weeks or a couple months or whatever it may be. But we always make sure that we're there for all of our clients.
That's great. Wow. Well, what a great program. We've been speaking with Ashley Much, again, from Pets for Life. She's based in Philadelphia, but as we've heard, there are similar locations in Atlanta, Chicago, and L.A., and then, of course, 18 other similar cities with the same kind of services, and 5 more to be added in the coming months. So, again, it's operated by the Humane Society of the United States, so you can go and search there. Their website, and then find Pets for Life to find out more information. So, Ashley, thanks so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals, and for all your great work.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
In a few moments, we'll be speaking briefly with Blanca Hernandez, founder of Forever Yours Pet Rescue, which is holding a major adoption event about 3 weeks from now, August 24th. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner with something from one of our new favorites in the realm of animal comedy. This is Joe Zimmerman with a piece called Animal Attacks on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Animal attacks are confusing because everywhere you travel, there's a different attack technique. I was down in Florida, they were like, alligator attack, just running a zigzag. Everybody knows that. I didn't know that. Is that true? Because aren't alligators' eyes on the sides of their head? Wouldn't they see you when you're zigging and zagging? Like, there he is. Got him. Okay, he's back. Good thing he's not sprinting straight ahead. That'd be my blind spot. I'm going straight ahead. I know some attacks, like I know shark attack, put it in a headlock, drag it onto land. I know that one. Stupid shark. Can't even breathe. What a dumb shark. I've always heard if you see a wolf in the wild, you're not supposed to smile, takes the teeth as a sign of aggression. Yeah, I don't know who sees a wolf in the wild and goes, it's a pack of wolves, wave. They're smiling back at us. I hope they come play. And there's something called an alligator snapping turtle that can be up to 300 pounds, very aggressive if you're ever attacked. They say to hold its head underwater because it has a weak neck. Maybe. But if I'm ever attacked by a 300-pound turtle, I feel like my first move is to walk away. Right? I think step two with the turtle is if it chases, you're going to want to keep walking. Just don't take a nap. Oh, turtles hate naps. Little Aesop's Fable humor, get things going.
All right, that was Joe Zimmerman with a piece called Animal Attacks, taken from his CD, Smiling at Wolves. Tell us a little bit about Forever, Yours Pet Rescue, and its forthcoming adoption event, August 24th. Let's welcome Blanca Hernandez to Talking Animals. Good morning, Blanca.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Sure. So let's start off with a quick sort of overview of Forever, Yours Pet Rescue. When was it founded, and what would you describe as its mission?
All righty. It's Fur. Forever Yours, if you are.
Right.
And we were founded a little less than a year ago, about 10 months ago, and within that time frame, we have already saved and rehomed a little over 100 animals, which is a great feat because we're such a small group. We're about a group of 8 volunteers, and we've all have experience in volunteering with different rescues and with the county shelter, and we decided to put together our own group because the need was just so high. And what we do and what most local rescues do, basically, it is giving the animal the gift of time. So basically, when an animal is out of time, they're on their last day, sometimes the last hours of the shelter, we are notified. And if we have space, volunteer space, foster space, which is very important, you know, our fosters are basically the backbone of all rescues, then we're able to go and pull that animal and put it in a home, in a volunteer home, and give it the gift of time and love and socialization. And we take it to events. We make sure they're all healthy and vetted and socialized. And we find them a home, and we give them the gift of time. And basically, that's what the role of the rescues is.
So really, Forever, and again, Fur, F-U-R, ever, is serving kind of, in those cases at least, as sort of a transition for those animals who, rather than have the clock tick out all the way in a sort of a dark manner, this gives them more time to end up in a home.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the amount of animals that we can save, that rescues can save, is all varied and dependent upon the amount of fosters that they have available. And that is so very important that we have volunteer foster homes. Sometimes it could be just a couple of days, a week, it could be a couple of months. And without the foster homes, we really wouldn't have the opportunity to save these animals.
And so when you mentioned the 8 volunteers that are sort of the core of the rescue, are there more than those 8 that are doing the fostering that you're describing?
No, they're actually our foster homes. And within them, we have 25 cats and kittens. We have a couple of volunteers that are outside of that realm that will do marketing, that will help at special event setup type things, that will do some online posting and such for us. But the core would then be the volunteer fosters.
Well, that's great. That sounds like a very busy, dedicated lot then, that's for sure.
It sure is.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the event coming up in about 3 weeks' time.
We have a wonderful event coming up that we have put together. It is going to be held August 24th. It is an indoor event at a brand new dog agility center called Dogism. It's going to be from 12 to 4, and Dogism is actually in Oldsmar. It's off the corner of Tampa Bay Boulevard and Pine Street. We have put together some local rescues that are going to be there. We have food vendors. We have craft vendors. We have a dog agility demonstration. We also have a food drive. So Cindy's Pets, they work with a Meals on Wheels program, and they deliver pet food to those seniors that are on Meals on Wheels to avoid them sharing their food with their pets. So we're also having a food drive there, and they're going to be 100 goodie bags are going to be distributed to the first 100 people that attend. So it's going to be a great event, all indoor, air conditioning, to support local businesses and crafters, we invited them as well. So it's going to be pretty busy, and it's going to be a great family-oriented event.
A couple questions that raises. First of all, I guess I'm curious to know what's in the goodie bags just for that for that first 100.
You have to be present to win.
Okay, okay, all right, that's fair enough. And so, how many rescues / animals do you think will be present there for potential adoption on the 24th?
We're going to have 6 rescues. They're going to be a mixture of dogs, cats, kittens, and puppies. I'm not sure how many they're going to bring yet at this time because mm-hmm. it's still 3 weeks out, and
sure.
some may be adopted and some may be added.
Of course.
Yes, but there will be plenty to choose from.
That's great. And of course, on a Saturday from 12 to 4, indoors with air conditioning, what's not to like? I mean, gosh, that's
absolutely.
Making it
it's
so...
Actually Sunday.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. That's right. It's Sunday the 24th. That's right. So let's repeat that. Sunday, August 24th, noon to 4 at Dogism, which is at 110 Pine Avenue in Oldsmar. Find out more about the event and to find out more about Forever Yours Pet Rescue itself, you can go to foreveryourspetrescue.com.
Yes, sir. We're still looking for volunteers and sponsors as well, so please contact us via the website.
That's great. All right. Well, Blanca, thank you so much. Good luck with the event.
Thank you so much for all your help out there.
Yeah, and thanks for helping those animals get a little reprieve and find homes where they otherwise obviously would be not so lucky.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'll be offering a copy of the new CD by Damon Albarn. Is the prize in today's Name That Animal Tune. We'll get to that in a moment or two here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. This came to me by way of a blog post and report from Colorado. At its national convention in Denver this week, officials of the American Veterinary Medical Association have taken the unusual step of quote-unquote clarifying the organization's policy on cat decline to stress that it's a major surgery, making prominent use of the word amputation in describing the procedure for the first time. It's a step towards candor concerning the operation, but one that probably won't placate the AVMA's critics on the issue, including many vets who consider decline to be cruel and unnecessary. The main intent of the revised policy is to elevate the seriousness of the procedure in the minds of veterinarians and hopefully the public, says Dr. Ted Cohn, a longtime local vet who will assume the presidency of the AVME shortly. It's imperative that pet owners know that this is not a simple procedure. Step in the right direction for those of us who care about and have talked perhaps endlessly about the feline decline, what it really means and the impact it really has on those animals. On sort of a both local or Florida and national level, took this from the Associated Press, Dateline Orange Park, Northeast Florida authorities say they've arrested 2 teenage girls seen in videos posted online lighting a threatened gopher tortoise on fire and stomping it to death. Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission said the teens, aged 15 and 18, were arrested on charges of felony cruelty to animals and taking, harassing, harming, or killing a gopher tortoise. The video showed the girls dousing the tortoise with a flammable fluid and one of them stomping on the animal till its shell broke. The younger will be prosecuted in the juvenile system. The other faces up to 5 years in prison on the felony cruelty charge and up to 60 days in charge jail for the second charge. On a much more upbeat note, and speaking of adoption, from our friends at Cat Crusaders, they'll be sort of taking over the Hillsborough County Pet Resource Center this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Good time to adopt a feline in particular. Let's just say the adoption fees for cats and kittens that you would normally encounter will be waived. If you say this, you saw the Cat Crusaders promotion on Facebook, which I think you can legitimately say now, hearing about it perhaps on the radio. Of course, you'll be saving that many more cats' lives. So again, the Pet Resource Center is located at 440 North Falconbird Road, Tampa, Florida, 33619 if you're map questing or Google mapping, etc. Also want to mention that Sunset Bridge, led by Gracie Grishup, both she and the band are big animal people and perform at animal events, including Talking Animals events. We'll be holding forth at Ellis this Sunday, August 3rd. So I'm not sure what time that gets underway. I think probably early afternoon, I guess, late morning. And I want to remind you again that there's a screening coming up of American Mustang Monday, August 25th, presented by Florida Voices for Animals. And I had a chance to actually see the film because I think I'll be interviewing the writer-producer of the film before this screening, but it deals with the whole very important topic of wild horses and burros who are being rounded up, often because of conflicts and complaints from cattle ranchers by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, confined in pens and then often sold off for slaughter. So the screening is Monday, August 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the AMC West Shore 14. Again, it is, as I mentioned before, one of these so-called tug screenings, so sort of in the Groupon mode. They don't reach a certain number of folks who are interested in buy tickets, then the screening will not be able to move forward. So tickets are on sale at this point, and you can go to floridavoicesforanimals.org to find out more about the screening and to get your tickets, etc. I think that's all we have time for this week of animal news and announcements. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a member of WNF technically to win, though we certainly encourage you to become one if you haven't recently. And there'll be a prize, a copy of the new CD by Damon Albarn, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's named an animal tune on Talking Animals. We'll maybe take any guesses that happen to come in off the air. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Back next Wednesday, August 6th, with yet another edition. Meanwhile, I hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Why don't you like us on Facebook? The show and or me personally. Would it kill you? I don't think so. Also follow us on Twitter if you don't mind. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Alternative Radio is next on WMNF. This is WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks so much for listening. We'll speak again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.